Thanks very much, Waldo. Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks very much to Cedar and you all for the invitation and the opportunity to be able to speak to you this afternoon. Having said that, I do approach my task today with some trepidation. Work choices a year in review are a somewhat daunting task, I suggest, at the outset, given all that has gone on in the past couple of years. We are, in fact, now 14 months on, indeed, since the introduction of the changes that we're now talking about this morning. It's just on exactly 2 years since the Prime Minister first spoke to Federal Parliament after having been elected control of both Houses of Parliament for the first time. He outlined to the Parliament what the government was intending to do by way of workplace relations reform. Just on 18 months ago, we were summoned to Canberra on a sunny Sunday to be given an outline by the Prime Minister directly about just what the government was intending to do by way of these reforms. So one way and the other, for now really 2 years, we have been involved with a whole range of different issues that have been thrown up in regards to work choices. 10 minutes makes that task a difficult one to deal with. Secondly, though, I've also got some concerns about dealing with this particular topic simply because of the issues in terms of keeping on top with just how many new developments are being thrown up almost every day. For starters, at the moment, I'm still reeling from the fact that I'm not allowed to use the word work choices. I can tell you, a difficult ask when that has represented about every third word that I've uttered for the last 2 years. Shows what an interesting person I am. But still, the issues keep coming. Last week, it was who's better looking, more attractive, Julia Gillard, Joe Hockey? Tough question, particularly for a Kevin Andrews fan like me. But No doubt some of these weighty issues will be things that the forthcoming member for Corio looks forward to dealing with in his new role in the future. To address the subject briefly, to work choices a year in review, I'll make some brief comments. No doubt about it, the changes have obviously been controversial changes. They are obviously also, at the moment, a moving target, as the federal government has moved on Monday night to introduce its stronger safety net amending bill, which quite clearly backpedals in the face of its concerns about the public perceptions about the current framework. The changes that we've been living with for the last 14 months have undoubtedly, based on our experience, certainly enabled more diverse employment arrangements to be put in place. But I think, again, no doubt, and I go right back to some of those discussions we had 14, 18 months ago, they were always structured in a way that were going to lead to some outcomes that would create the opportunity for public criticism, public comment, and would in turn, I think, in some respects, make parts of the legislation an easy target. And those outcomes have inevitably eventuated. We perhaps might have seen more of them if not for the current strong labour market. But look, in terms of my comments today, I'm going to leave some of that controversy behind. I think many of those issues are well documented, well publicised, well known, and instead perhaps throw some other considerations into the mix today. Like it or not, I suggest that many aspects of the work choices changes, and I will continue to use that word, many of those changes have been particularly significant in a longer term context. They have tackled issues that were deserving of being tackled in terms of an ongoing framework of workplace relations legislation in this country. They have introduced some significant shifts in direction, shifts in approach that go well beyond some of the controversial short-term issues that are now being highlighted, and I think have demonstrated that some of the long-standing norms that we have been accustomed to do deserve to be challenged, that we can look at doing things in a different way. I'll give you a few brief examples. The new legislation has undoubtedly changed the role and emphasis of awards. And I suggest in response to that that we have been too tolerant in the past of accepting an at times complicated, overlapping, often misunderstood framework of award coverage. Awards operating at both an industry and an occupational level. Awards which often mean, as many of you will be aware, that in a small business with perhaps 15 or 20 employees, a relatively small organisation like that can still be having to deal with perhaps four or five, in some cases even more, different awards applying different coverage to that particular business. So in the context of the work choices changes, I think sensibly from our point of view, we have seen the focus placed upon the individual workplace, outcomes determined at the workplace level between employers, employees, unions if employees want unions to be involved. Consequently, we've seen awards deliberately pushed into the background. We've seen an end to the roping in exercises that were a feature of our system in the past. We've seen changes designed to limit the scope of awards. We've seen the Industrial Relations Commission's award-making powers almost removed completely, and we have seen a decision taken to also introduce an ongoing process to review award classification rates and indeed to review that overall complicated framework comprised of literally hundreds of different occupational and industry-based awards. Secondly, we've seen the introduction of a set of statutory minimum standards. Now, we can have debates about what should be contained within that group of standards, but I suggest to you that that change will again be a lasting change. It is introducing a common framework of minimum standards, have application for award-covered people, have application for award-free people, form the basis of the matters that must be included in agreements. I suggest to you again, a sensible change, a change in approach which in some respects the ALP also looks to take up in its current Forward with Fairness policy when you look at the 10 so-called national employment standards that form part of that policy. So I think we are going to live in the future with a set of statutory legislated minimum standards rather than with that complicated safety net comprised by the ongoing award framework. We've seen further changes, obviously, also in regards to agreement making. We now have the certainty of knowing that from the date when an agreement is lodged, it begins to operate from that date. At the same time, there is more onus placed on workplace parties, the employer in particular, to make sure that that agreement has been developed and complies with the legislative framework. We also see, sensibly, a greater focus within the legislation upon outcomes which ensure, as far as possible, that workplace parties abide by the agreement that they have committed to, don't walk away from that agreement when it suits them. Next, we see within the framework additional limitations placed around the taking of protected industrial action. I think changes again introduced in response to a view from many employers, certainly many of the employers that we represent, that it has been too easy in the past for unions to put themselves in a position where they are able to take legal or protected industrial action, rather than that act, those actions being something that should be a more considered, perhaps last resort, in a deadlocked negotiation process. Fourthly, I point to the changes in regards to the operation of the unfair dismissal laws. Now, no argument about it. They are changes which, on the one view, might be seen as heavy-handed, but they are changes that have been designed to tackle a fundamental issue that I suggest has bedevilled and discredited the operation of the unfair dismissal laws for many years in this country, the fact that that system, instead of focusing on genuine cases, has been one that was too easy to access and has in fact been accessed by many applicants. We've seen many people pushed into that system in the past who probably shouldn't have been there in the first place. Next, the steps taken towards the development of a national industrial relations system. Tim has already made reference to that aspect of the changes. I think we would say by any measure they are a sensible step forward, although still perhaps a little clumsy in implementation, with dual powers still being exercised at a state and federal level in all other states other than our very far-sighted state of Victoria. Next, we see the restrictions that have been imposed upon the Industrial Relations Commission. I guess somewhat ironic in its centenary year last year that the Industrial Relations Commission probably copped the biggest whack in its distinguished existence. The Commission has certainly been a big loser under the Work Choices Framework. It is no longer involved in minimum wage setting. It is no longer involved in the agreement approvals process. As I've already said, it has dramatically reduced award-making powers, a dramatically reduced role in dispute resolution. It is dealing with a lot less unfair dismissal applications simply because there are a lot less of them around. Now, I'm not by any means a commission basher, despite the number of cases that I've lost in the commission over the years. That's got nothing to do with it. But I do suggest that the commission's contemporary role does need to be reviewed in our modern society, particularly in terms of some of the outcomes that we've seen in the past, some of the quaint roping in exercises that we've been used to, some of the convoluted test case, national wage case proceedings that we've been involved in, and I think perhaps most importantly, looking at some of the endless dispute notifications that were a feature of the system in the past that brought parties before the Industrial Relations Commission in circumstances where those parties should have been prepared, I suggest, and able in most of those cases to resolve those matters in their own particular workplaces. Just some examples, I suggest, of the involvement of an organisation whose role has historically been very important in this country, but does need to be looked at in a different light in the current context. I want to mention finally, in conclusion, some specific single issue changes targeted at the building and construction industry, which I suggest should not be underestimated. This legislation, in conjunction with accompanying changes that have introduced the Australian Building and Construction Commission, have introduced changes to what were seen as previously long-standing and unresolved issues in the building and construction industry. Now, it's not an area in which my organisation is directly involved, but when I talk to people who are directly involved in that industry, they tell me that the genie is very much back in the bottle as a result of those changes. I suggest that that's where it should stay. To conclude, the work choices changes are obviously controversial. Certain aspects, rightly or wrongly, are in the spotlight. Some aspects of the current framework are about to disappear. But I suggest to you that some of the aspects that perhaps underline what the legislation is all about will have a much longer lasting life, are in some respects reflected currently in the Forward with Fairness Labor Party position, and will survive regardless of which government is elected later this year. Thanks very much.